You're tuned to WFHB
91.3
and 98.1 FM.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported.
Community radio for South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community.
And supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. I'm Michael Glad.
And I'm Jonah Chester. This is the Daily Local News for Monday, December 18th, 2017.
The best words in the best order. It's just that my best words weren't good enough, and my order was completely wrong. But the idea is right, you know, that we take the language around us and reshape it in ways that create something new.
Adrian Matiko was announced as Indiana's Poet Laureate last week by the Indiana Arts Commission. The Indiana University creative writing professor speaks about his writing, the state's history with poetry, and his fiercest critic, his daughter, coming up on today's feature report.
Also coming up in the next half hour, Janet Schell works at the Teacher's Warehouse, which accepts donated school supplies and books teachers can pick up to stock their classrooms. A former teacher, Schell's worked with 525 teachers and 7,000 students in the last school year. Her story is coming up on today's episode of Activate, our weekly segment spotlighting people working for positive change in our community. But first, your daily headlines.
Monroe County Council members have approved a 1% food and beverage tax to help fund an expansion of the Bloomington-Monroe County Convention Center. In a special session last night, Councilmember Jeff McKim voiced his support.
Hands, we can make sure that the community plays a substantive role in the design, that we can create a livable streetscape, that we can accentuate the virtues of the Beeline Trail, and we can work with surrounding neighborhoods, and that we don't leave the design to a private developer who'd rather build something a lot less expensive and a lot less in the best interest of the community off of I-69.
McKim said he's motivated by the prospect of a more vibrant downtown that restores balance between locals, students, and visitors. Reading from the Indiana State Code, County Attorney Michael Flory described how the tax is applied.
Transactions included food served off-premises, sold in a heated state or heated by the retail merchant, utilizing two or more mixed ingredients or sold with eating utensils. It does not apply to transactions that are exempt from sales tax. So one of the easiest ways to assume, people ask, is this included or not? If you pay a sales tax on it, it will be subject to the food and beverage tax.
The Convention Center expansion is currently estimated to cost $72 million and would include a new Embassy Suites hotel. However, the cost of the hotel is expected to be borne by the hotel developer. County Council members heard 2 hours of public testimony both for and against the food and beverage tax. Proponents of the tax cite benefits a larger convention facility, including job creation and downtown businesses stimulated by tourism. County Commissioner Amanda Barge said the community has waited too long for an expansion and pitched the benefits to local nonprofits.
I want you to imagine a Habitat breakfast that could bring in double the amount of money than it does today because that convention center is too small. Imagine the Soup Bowl benefit, the Boys and Girls Club, the Youth Services Bureau, or Stone Belt being able to use that space, a space that would really fit their needs.
Opponents say other funding options have not been fully explored. Some see the tax as regressive and a burden on low-income people. Reverend Forrest Gilmore, director of Shalom Community Center, says he tentatively supports the tax and cites the 260 jobs that market studies predict will be created. Gilmore doesn't believe the 1% tax will negatively impact poor people.
In terms of the people I work with on a daily basis, I don't see 10 cents on a burger or a pizza creating a substantial impact on their lives. I just want to put that forth. And when we're talking about the size of tax, I'm not a fan generally of this type of tax, but given the limits that we have placed on us around how we raise revenue locally, I think the impact is fairly minimal, and I don't see it being a significant impact on, say, a homeless person who's trying to get a hamburger.
County Council member Lee Jones was among those who could not support the tax.
But the public does not have an endless appetite for taxes, and I worry that piling one tax on top of another could make it that much more difficult to pass a tax that was truly necessary. In this instance, it feels to me kind of like we're being asked to tax the necessity to pay for an amenity. I realize that many supporters believe that the amount is so small it becomes insignificant. That may well be the case. But most of the people who have been speaking in support of this look to me like they have probably never really experienced serious financial difficulties during their lives.
Councilmember Marty Hawk also opposed the tax. Hawk favors increasing the innkeeper's tax instead. Before the council's vote, Council President Ryan Cobine said even if the tax is passed, a variety of factors could derail the expansion. Cobine said there are scenarios under which the tax could be repealed.
There are quite a few things that could derail this and make it such that having that in place is simply irrelevant. For example, if it becomes apparent at some point that it's simply not affordable to do this, something about construction. I mean, during the recent financial downturn in mortgages, I remember reading articles about the price of construction materials fluctuating remarkably, around 2008, 2009. I mean, there are a lot of variables at play. And so this is something I think everybody here and all in this body needs to keep in mind in terms of, and granted, the people that say, like, once you pass a tax, you never appeal it. Well, sometimes that's true, sometimes that's not. But I think at the very least, right, if something were to, like, completely blow up a project like this, I'm pretty certain, I haven't polled my fellow members, I'm pretty certain that the people on this body would certainly be willing to look at saying, well, if this isn't going to work, why do we have this in place?
The County Council passed the food and beverage tax on a 4-3 vote. The tax will take effect on February 28th.
A cohort of residents opposing a proposed waste transfer station in Monroe County continued to press county officials to oppose the project. Members of the group addressed the Solid Waste Management Board on December 14th. During public comment time, county resident Mark Napier said residents are stressed by the limbo they find themselves in.
What I would encourage the members of the board to do is think a little creatively and reach out to the other government agencies within the county and within the state to strengthen the protections so that the sort of thing that happened here and happened 4 years ago cannot happen. There need to be more checks and balances. So can we be more proactive so that folks aren't in limbo? And when we get this one killed 4 years down the road, the next neighborhood's not in limbo, and you're not sitting here when you'd like to be eating dinner, listening to someone like me complain about why this is happening again.
Solid Waste Management Director Tom McGlasson Jr. said he's not heard from the company proposing the project, that's Indiana Green Transfer and Recycling, regarding a needs assessment. The assessment is required by County Ordinance 2007-18. Indiana Green Transfer and Recycling applied to the Indiana Department of Environmental Management for a solid waste transfer permit in September, without regard for local ordinance requirements for prior local review. Co-owner Jeff Fanyo has notified the county his company is now re-evaluating the project in light of feedback by area residents. Commissioner Amanda Barge says she doesn't approve of the proposed waste transfer station. Barge says she has communicated directly with Fanyo.
I'm really against it. I'm also really frustrated with the limbo that so many, that county resources and citizen resources are being taken up because we're in limbo. And I have been extremely direct in my emails and with Jeff Fanyo and just saying, could you, we would like to hurry this along and find out where we are. Mm-hmm. But I just wanted to say that.
Board members Cheryl Munson and Steve Volan discussed the process with McGlasson. Munson asked if the company's IDEM application permit would expire if the company continues to suspend action on the proposal. According to McGlasson, the company has not responded to a request for more information.
I don't know that I'm in a position to give you an exact date in answering that. I mean, I can tell you that the request for additional information that was provided to Indiana Green in response to the permit application was due 60 days from when they received it. I don't know exactly when they received it. I know that letter was dated November the 3rd. So
November 3rd,
and to my knowledge, they have not responded to that request as of today. So January 4th, maybe the 5th, would be the 60-day expiration date of that window. What item, if they fail to respond, what item would do and how long that would take, I can't answer that. I would add that they do have the option of requesting an extension in lieu of responding to the entire RAI if they feel that they need more time.
In other business, McGlasson reports a waste composition study conducted by Kessler Consulting reveals that 70% of the county's solid waste is compostable or recyclable. Board member Steve Volan remarked on the finding.
Regardless of what the final outcome of the study is, it's a statistic, I think, or a set of statistics that I think everyone should know. At least 70% of the entire combined waste stream of Monroe County is either recyclable or compostable. If we take nothing else from the report today, let everyone remember that significant aspect.
It certainly shows that we can all do a better job.
Well, but I mean,
with waste reduction.
Part of the point of the consultation is, as much as everyone would like to be able to remove that stuff from the waste stream, they may need that facility that only a place like the district can provide or a private entity to do that recycling.
McGlasson says the consulting firm has been contracted to examine the feasibility of several types of waste facilities, including what's called a single stream recovery facility, or MRF, or MRF, and a composting facility. The study is just one component of a larger feasibility study Kessler is conducting for Monroe County. The county is considering various types of processing facilities in an effort to reduce its waste stream. McGlasson says the consulting firm is examining several types of facilities, including what's called a single stream recovery facility, or MRF.
And this would be something that that would be able to manage the materials collected by the city under their new collection programs, collected by the university under the majority of their collection programs. and a number of other public and private entities that are out there doing recycling collection programs.
Kessler is also studying the feasibility of a mixed waste processing facility and a composting facility. Board member Cheryl Munson asked McGlasson for details on the composting facility.
And is that can either be a standalone facility or something that is a companion to the other three? Is that correct?
A composting facility or an organics facility, it would be a standalone facility. It's just a matter of having the space. If you're doing a mixed waste processing facility, it would certainly make sense to have that composting facility in close proximity, because you're going to be, as Mr. Volan, just statistics he just rattled off, you're going to be pulling a substantial amount of organics out of that waste stream going through your mixed waste processing facility. A composting facility is just a matter of space, possibly permitting and zoning, but it can go about anywhere that we have the space and have proper zoning and permitting to do.
McGlasson said Kessler will estimate the cost of each type of facility, including revenues or losses based on volume projections. The Monroe County Solid Waste Management Board will not meet again until January next year.
A professional hunting firm contracted by the City of Bloomington Parks and Recreation Department is expected to kill 100 deer in the Griffey Lake Nature Preserve this winter. White Buffalo Incorporated began hunting activities in the Nature Preserve on Friday. The Parks and Recreation Department says the hunting may continue into late February. The hunting comes after studies of the vegetation at Griffey Lake indicated a deer grazing have been detrimental to native plant species. The Bloomington Parks and Recreation Department were advised to reduce the number of deer to allow plant life in the area to recover. The deer reduction plan has been approved by the Board of Park Commissioners in the Indiana Department of Natural Resources Division of Fish and Wildlife. A similar bid to reduce deer populations at the Nature Preserve was stopped by area residents last year. In a press release, the Parks and Recreation Department stated, quote, "Safety is the first priority of both the City of Bloomington and wildlife management firm White Buffalo Incorporated. The intermittent closure of the Griffey Lake Nature Preserve between the hours of noon and 8 a.m. is necessary to ensure public safety. The park and its hiking trails remain open between the hours of 8 a.m. and noon daily," unquote. The deer removed from the Griffey Lake herd will be processed using grant funds, and the venison will be donated to the Hoosier Hills Food Bank. More information about the Griffey Lake deer herd reduction efforts and closures at Griffey Lake Nature Preserve is available by contacting the Bloomington Parks and Recreation Department. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Jonah Chester.
And I'm Michael Glad. Adrian Matika was named the State of Indiana's Poet Laureate last Monday. Matika, professor of creative writing at Indiana University and the author of several poetry compilations. He's the author of The Devil's Garden in 2003, which won the New York New England Award, and Mixology in 2009, a winner of the 2008 National Poetry Series. Mixology was also a finalist for an NAACP Image Award for Outstanding Literature. His third collection, The Big Smoke, in 2013, was awarded the 2014 Ainsfield Wolf Book Award and was a finalist for the 2013 National Book Award and the 2014 Pulitzer Prize. His most recent book, Map to the Stars, is set in Indianapolis in the 1980s and was published in March.
Okay, so this is a poem called Emily Dickinson featuring basketball and EPMD. And everyone knows who Emily Dickinson is or should, but EPMD was a great and overlooked rap group in the 1980s. I read poetry out here, spindling the spindles of happenstance, its M-dashery like the closed eye of a winking man used for a record needle. I love when the laces of my suede kicks come undone like the best laid plans. And when I crouch to tie those boys up, I love savoring the shy glory of my girl's skirted knee, her stitched hem branching like the feathered stems in a blue boa she would never wear. There are too many boas in this world, and the first feather in their garish elegance, America, home of lovers and EPMD breaking car speakers like high school curfew since 1988, someplace when I loved summer, the dash from one hoop to another, a stray kitten chewing on a moth in the Zionsville bleachers before we fed him a hamburger, and somebody's business as usual cassette untangling bit by bit like laughs. I think, well, right now I just sit and marvel at the fact someone picked me to be poet laureate of the state of Indiana. It's such an incredible honor to be chosen when we have so many brilliant poets in our state. And they, you know, I'm thinking right now of my colleagues here at IU, you know, Ross Gay, who's wonderful, and Kathy Bowman, and my wife Stacy, who was a brilliant poet before I met her. So it's not just home team bias, you know. We're really fortunate here to have poets who give and support the art of poetry. So with all of these other options and all of these other really terrific writers to choose from, it's pretty overwhelming that they chose me. Like many, many poets, I started writing to try to impress someone. But then later on, I realized that this was a very vital means of communication and expression. And when I say later on, I mean like a couple weeks later. It didn't take very long for me to get hooked on the idea of trying to create music with words. Well, I listen to music when I'm writing. For me, there's not a lot of gap between the kind of rhythmic intention in a poem and the rhythmic intention in a song. I mean, you know, it might lay itself out in a song with a drum beat, but we have stressed and unstressed syllables in poems. So there are ways that the two things sort of mirror one another. an action and intention. And besides that, I mean, the English language has the potential to sound so wonderful. There are different kinds of programming I'm trying to set up in order to put poems in front of Hoosiers. You know, there's so many poetry readers and poetry writers in our state, and I hope I'm going to be in communication with them. And then there are also a lot of other people who don't read poems, and I would love for them to look up and see a poem on a billboard, you know, or on a bus, or reach in their pocket and find a poem and not even be expecting to find that there. I don't know how that works, but I want to put poems in places they aren't ordinarily found. So the Poet Laureate position is housed with the Indiana Arts Commission, but it's a state position. So at some point I get to go and read it in the state house while the legislature's in session. I don't know if I'm going to be reading my poem about EPMD while I'm there for them or not. I don't know what I'm going to read, but, you know, so it's housed with the IAC and I get to work with them pretty directly. And they have a mandate from the Department of Education to try to do work and, you know, to introduce art into the public schools. So I'm really excited about being able to go and work with young writers. You know, I was encouraged while I was in high school to write. And so I used to write short stories and things like that, but nobody ever saw them because they were terrible. And then when I came to IU, I found poems. I mean, it was pretty immediate. I think I was 19, and that was the first time I'd ever tried to write a poem was when I come here, yeah. I wrote it because I was trying to impress a girl, so the whole plan was to share it mm-hmm. with her and nobody else, mm-hmm. and it was a terrible, terrible poem. I actually have it still someplace. I saw it in one of my notebooks when I was moving maybe about 7 or 8 years ago, so I know it exists in my house still somewhere. I'm not trying very hard to find it, but it was a ghastly poem. Well, I mean, I had the idea that a poem is essentially all of the biggest words you can think of in, you know, order that makes some of them rhyme. That was my idea of what poems were. So there's just this, you know, all of this polysyllabic language. It doesn't make any sense at all. But in some ways, I was actually not that far off in terms of the idea of poetry, which is, and this is someone else's quote, and I can't remember who, the best words in the best order. It's just that my best words weren't good enough, and my order was completely wrong. But the idea is right, you know, that we take the language around us and reshape it in ways that create something new. You know, probably 20 or 25 drafts before the poem is ready, and it takes about a year for me to finish a poem, but I take breaks from the poem. So I'll put it away for a month, try to learn some new things, come back and look at it again. And I do that. I mean, my most recent book is called Map to the Stars, and it took me 6 years to write the book. So some of the poems were being revised still in 2016, but I'd started them back in 2010. Right. The book before that is called The Big Smoke, and it took 8 years to write. And so there are poems that were written, you know, at the beginning of that 8 years that were still being questioned and revised by right before the book was coming out. So, I mean, I think there's a rush because we have a very immediate culture right now. And, you know, 140, I guess it's more than 140 characters on Twitter now, but, you know, there's a sort of immediacy to thought and idea, but poems aren't tweets. You know, poems are poems, and they take as long as they need to offer themselves to the world. And any kind of trying to push that ahead or speed it up is just going to do harm. So, you know, at some point I learned that and just settled in. I'm like, all right, cool. I might not have any poems to share with magazines right now or any new poems to share with the world, not because I'm not writing, but because they're not ready yet. And I'm not going to make them ready just to, you know, to have something. So I want to sort of reiterate this. We are so lucky in Bloomington. We have an amazing literary community here. It's not at the university. It's not in the town. It's kind of a combination of both of them. There are poets who straddle all of the various communities here, and there are readings all the time. And so what I hope we could figure out a way to do is also sort of make our fellow Bloomingtonians aware of these readings and aware of these workshops and events, because poetry is for everybody. So if someone wants to write a poem, they can just show up to the workshops. They can come to these Fountain Square readings or to the readings at the Buzzkirk or on campus, and Hopscotch Coffee has readings all the time. And they're just everywhere around us. when people, if people are interested. Yeah, so, you know, it's really wild. I didn't write about my daughter at all for a long time because everything I would try to write about her would fall short of her brilliance. You know, and this isn't just like sort of the, like, you know, dad with hearts instead of eyes stuff. This is, she's an amazing, amazing human being. And I still don't understand how she chose us. But she is, she's so wonderful that the poems I was writing were just always falling short. And so it took a very, an extended period of being away. Like when I was working someplace else and I'd be gone for big parts of the week, for me to have the space and the time to sit and really reflect on my daughter. And so once that happened, I was able to kind of begin writing and thinking about the experience of being a dad. I also needed to come to terms with my own, like, sort of absent father and what that meant and how that influenced me. So, you know, there's a series of things that needed to happen before I was prepared to sit and write about her. So I'm doing it right now. I'm writing poems about her now, but they are very difficult to write, especially since she's a really harsh critic.
That was Indiana Poet Laureate Adrian Matika. Matika's latest book, Map to the Stars, was published by Penguin Press in March.
The Daily Local News is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com.
Support for WFHB also comes from Lauren Wood Builders. Lauren Wood Builders is a family-owned company that sources local materials and local craftsmen to minimize environmental impact and sustain community. For more information, online at laurenwoodbuilders.com. You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Wes Martin, along with Sarah Vaughn for Cats Week, a partnership with Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Wes Martin.
Our engineer is Wes Martin. Our theme music is provided by The Impossible Shapes. Executive producer is Wes Martin. For WFHB, I'm Jonah Chester.
And I'm Michael Glab. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast, as well as all other WFHB news programming online at WFHB.org.
You can be a part of our award-winning news team. For more information about joining our volunteer team of citizen journalists, email news@WFHB.org.
Now stay tuned for KiteLine, a program amplifying the voices of those within Indiana's prison system. That's coming up next on WFHB.
The Daily Local News is produced by a staff of over 50 volunteers
working in the WFHB News and Public Affairs Department.
Comments, suggestions, and story ideas
may be submitted directly to our news staff via email.
The address is news@wfhb.org.